The Tom Woods Show, episode 1149.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, if you enjoy this podcast and my sister show, Contra Krugman, you will love the Contra Cruise, which we are sailing on for the third year in a row. This year, we'll be joined by the Mises Institute's Jeff Deist, Brett Vanat of the School Sucks podcast, and television producer, actress, and cryptocurrency authority, Naomi Brockwell. It's an amazing time. Get the details quickly at ContraCruise.com.
Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here, talking to Courtney Ballacher today. She wrote, produced, and directed a new film called Little Pink House, and it recounts the events that culminated in the Supreme Court case of Kelo versus New London, which, of course, was the famous eminent domain case. And the twist here was that this was a case of eminent domain in which private land was being taken from one private owner and being given to another private owner. And the question was, is this an abuse of eminent domain, and so on and so forth. And the result is quite a compelling film indeed. We're going to talk about it today. Now, obviously, if I wanted to make this wonkish, we would talk about the incorporation doctrine and, you know, whether the Bill of Rights was meant to apply to the states, or whether, you know, we could also talk about eminent domain being an abomination regardless of who the recipient of the seized land is. You're still taking somebody's property away regardless of whether you have good intentions or not. Like, we wouldn't say in any other part of our lives that as long as your intentions are good, you can do terrible things to people. So we libertarians might be inclined to say across the board, let's be against eminent domain. But that's not the conversation I want to have today. Today I want to talk about this particular film and its potential to reach people outside of those of us who might take a more absolutist stand on eminent domain. This is the first step for a lot of people in thinking about these issues. Courtney, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Tom.
Just watched Little Pink House last night. Very interesting. Great. Very well done. I knew the story, but to actually watch a dramatic depiction of the major events in the story where the homeowner finds out what is certainly going to happen, regardless of consent, this is going to happen, is very, very powerfully done. First of all, what's your background?
Well, I went to graduate school and got my master's in theater directing, and that's what I started my career doing in New York City. I used to direct off-Broadway theater. I directed Joseph Gordon-Levitt, his first play, which was great. And I did that for a while, but I always loved film, and I always fantasized about going into film. So my husband, Ted Ballacher, and I, we met in New York. We moved to Los Angeles, and I rebooted my career, and I started off at the bottom as a lowly assistant and learned how movies get made. And then I actually ended up as a producer on many horror films, made some movies for Dimension, worked on American Pie movies for Universal. And I did a lot of producing, but I really missed directing. And after I was producing for a bunch of other people, and my husband and now producing partner Ted was producing for other people, we decided we wanted to make stuff that we were really passionate about. So we created our own production company called Corchula Productions with the motto of making important ideas entertaining. And we've been around for almost 7 years. And within those 7 years, we've made two feature films. One was a documentary that was released a year ago called Can We Take a Joke? That focuses on free speech and comedy. And then the second is this narrative feature, Little Pink House, starring Catherine Keener and Gene Triplehorn. And so we set out to make films that entertain but can hopefully have an impact.
Now, I don't want to brand you in a way that you don't want to be branded. So I'm not going to say that this is a libertarian film per se, but obviously a libertarian is going to be sympathetic to a homeowner who says, go take a hike. I want to live in my house, because we all have this instinct that you should be, you know, allowed to live in your house. And this goes beyond merely the libertarian community. But I wanted to talk to you because I thought it would be of particular interest to my audience, which followed the Kelo case very closely. But at the same time, I want to assure everybody who many of us have been burned in the past. We go, oh, this movie has libertarian themes, or this is a libertarian movie. And I'm sorry to say, I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. They're almost always terrible. I mean, the production values are bad. The acting is wooden. You're looking, you know, you're ready to commit an atrocity by the time the thing is over. This is the opposite of that. It's very compellingly done. And I think the lead is very, very convincing. It's not, her reaction is not melodramatic and over the top, but it's deeply emotional and intense. I think it's just pitch perfect the way it's portrayed.
Thank you.
How did you, you must have met, I should have checked this before. Is it Nancy Kelo?
Her name is Suzette Kelo.
Suzette, I'm sorry. I was thinking somebody else. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So did you go out and, you must have gone out to interview Suzette Kelo.
Absolutely. When we decided we were going to make this film, I read the book of the same title, Little Pink House, by Jeff Benedict. It's a phenomenal book. I highly recommend it for anyone who's interested in this story. When Ted and I decided we wanted to make this film, the first thing we did was fly to New London, Connecticut, where this all took place, and we sat down with Suzette. She's such a regular person. She was never looking for attention or to be the face of a cause. She just wanted to be left alone and live a quiet, peaceful life. So when we approached her, this was all very foreign to her. And she agreed to do it. She liked us. She trusted us. She trusted us so completely that she did not want to be involved in the creative process at all. So it was really just meeting Suzette, telling her how we wanted to make the film, telling her that we wanted to, you know, have an actor portray her. She knows, you know, she watches some films, but she's not, you know, a cinephile. So
yeah.
It wasn't like she had deep, you know, knowledge of the process. And I said, do you want to read the script? And she said, nope, I don't know anything about scripts, but I'm here for you if you need anything, but otherwise it's all on you. And in many ways as a writer, that's very liberating, but in many ways it's terrifying because at some point she's going to see the finished product and you hope that she's comfortable with it and likes it. And thank goodness she was, but that's how we started it. But she really did give us full creative control. And then after we got the okay from her and we optioned the book rights, we set out to finance the film, find financing for the film, and then find our lead actress, who is Catherine Keener.
I don't want to take away any of the mystique of the film, but I have to ask about the scene where the woman comes to her door, all smiles, mm-hmm. and says, you know, this is all going to be happening, this development, and we'd like to buy your house, and we're willing to offer you $68,000. And Suzette's response is, well, that's very, very nice of you to come ask, but I'm not interested. I love this house. Thank you very much. And she shows her out.
Mm-hmm.
And then in ensuing interactions, the smile starts to melt away, and it gets a little bit more blunt that, look, if you don't sell now, I can't guarantee you can get market price. And it just becomes mm-hmm. clearer and clearer that one way or another, we're going to get this house.
Yep.
That must be how it happened, but is that how she related it to you?
You know, I really got all of those facts and details from the book. Yes, that is how it happened. They were initially approached by these realtors who were working for this organization called the New London Development Corporation, which was a nonprofit set up by the government, but it was really just working completely in tandem with the city to try and get these people that were living in Suzette's neighborhood called Fort Trumbull to just basically sell their homes so that they could, you know, flatten the land and have a development company come in and build stuff that would benefit the Pfizer Corporation. Well, many people didn't want to leave. There were many elderly people in this neighborhood, people that were born in these homes that wanted to die in these homes. And Suzette Kelo had just purchased this home. She fixed it up with her bare hands. She painted it pink. All she wanted to do was start the next chapter of her life. She had raised 5 sons. They were all out of the house. She worked crazy hours as an EMT. She was studying to become a nurse. I mean, you know, this whole ordeal, Tom, took 10 years of her life. And I don't think a lot of people realize that when they,
even
you know,
I did.
People who know yeah. about. Yeah. I mean, it was a 10 from the minute that realtor knocked on her door until the United States Supreme Court decision saying, yes, it's legal for the city to kick you out of your home. That was 10 years of her life. And so, yes, it started off with offers. But then when people decided that they didn't want to leave, they used eminent domain, which, as you know, is only supposed to be used for things like building hospitals or schools or widening roads. It's not supposed to be used to hand over private property from one individual to another private entity. And that's essentially what was happening. These people were bullied. These people were intimidated. I mean, it was disgusting. And it was the most, you know, just the most horrific case of cronyism. You had the city, the government teaming up with a multi-billion-dollar company pushing around the little guy. And yes, it had this film obviously has very strong libertarian messages when you think about, you know, that side of it. But, you know, this film, it's like if you try to look at it through a political lens, it doesn't make sense, because you had really bad people on both sides. You had a Republican governor that came up with this idea because he wanted to rejuvenate the economy in this particular part of Connecticut. You had Democrats who were working for the New London Development Corporation that were the ones carrying out the plan. It resonates with people across the political spectrum. The film has so far. It's been amazing. We've been embraced by, you know, very liberal, progressive audiences. We've been embraced by conservative audiences. And of course, the libertarians are embracing the film, because it's not about what political party you align yourself with. It's about is it right for the government to take your property? And also, is it right for someone else to define what the value of your home is? Well, I think it's not okay. I think that we as individuals have the right, especially if we purchase private property, to determine what the value of that property is. And that's not what was happening. You had the city determining what the value of the property was.
Yeah, and this is always a problem, because especially when you're dealing with something as intimately connected to you as your own home, and especially when you worked on it and you poured so much of what is you into that home, some arbitrary figure can't capture that. It's inherently subjective what the value of your home is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what you see here in this case, and I think that that's why so many Americans were outraged by this decision. 85% of Americans polled thought that this was a horrible decision, is because you're right. It is subjective. It is not, okay, it's not like Pfizer Pharmaceutical was knocking on these people's doors, offering them millions of dollars for their home. That's not what happened. They didn't have to, because the city was going to get them out one way or the other so that things could be built that could benefit Pfizer. So that was one of the things for me just fascinated me about the story and made me have to make the film.
Let's talk about distribution. How do people see the film? This is the sort of question I tend to ask at the end, but I'm curious right now just because I want to follow up with this. What do people do if they want to see it?
Absolutely. We are in theaters now. We opened in theaters April 20th. We opened in New York, Los Angeles, Irvine, San Francisco, Berkeley, and Atlanta. We're just rolling out in more and more cities. We're opening in Denver and San Diego, to name a few, this weekend. Boston is this weekend. So people can go to littlepinkhousemovie.com and you click on Watch Little Pink House, and you're going to see a list of all the cities that we're playing in between now and early June, I think, or even mid-June. What's great, though, is if you do not see your city listed at littlepinkhousemovie.com, you can bring the film to your local theater. We're working with a cinema on demand company called Tug, and those things are blowing up, which is great. We have so many requests to bring the film to local theaters, and our website walks you through that. You can go to watch.littlepinkhousemovie.com or contact us if you have any questions. But we're doing sort of a hybrid model with our distribution. And what that means is we have what's called a traditional theatrical release, where, you know, mainstream movie theaters, mostly art house movie theaters, Landmark, are playing film. But then we're also doing this cinema on demand model, where if you're not living in a bigger city, or your city isn't on the list, you can bring it to you. So everybody can go to littlepinkhousemovie.com to find out if we are playing at your local theater.
Let me ask a question just to satisfy my curiosity. I would think that for you, releasing this film would be like the same level of chaos as a company launching a product, and it's the first day the product is launched. I mean, is this a case where you're getting very little sleep and you're doing promotional work 24 hours a day, or is it quite tranquil? I'm just curious to know what your life is like.
Oh, my life is completely chaotic right now.
Okay,
the first thing you describe. But it's good. You know, we're getting a lot of demand, which is wonderful. And we're getting a lot of interest, and we're trying to promote. And we're a small independent film, and we're competing with some pretty big studio movies that are currently in theaters too. So just like Suzette Kilo and her neighbors' movement was a grassroots movement to protect their homes, this film is a grassroots movement. And so we really rely on, we call them super fans, or people that have been following the film and want to bring it to their local theater. It takes a lot of time and effort, which we're more than happy to put in. And Suzette Kilo has been amazing. I mean, she tries to come to as many screenings as she can. She does Q&As with us. It's beautiful to see audiences react to her. Many come up to her with tears in their eyes, hug her, thank her for what she did. I mean, she lost, which is horrific, but the silver lining to that story is because she fought, millions of Americans got to keep their homes because many states did reform their eminent domain law so that this type of thing can't happen again. But there's still a lot of work to be done in that regard too. So in addition to releasing this film, the chaos of that, we're also launching a social action campaign, and we have a nonprofit set up where people can donate to just for the cause of bringing awareness and education and stopping this. And we actually did have an impact in Provincetown, Massachusetts. I have a very quick anecdote I can share with you. We played at the Provincetown International Film Festival last summer. A week before we screened, I got an email from a guy named Mike, and he said, "I saw that your movie's playing here. My family and I are dealing with something right now. We own a bike shop, and the city wants to kick us out so they can build a parking lot. And we don't want to leave. This is our livelihood." He said, "Can you help me?" So I went to the Institute for Justice, who are our partners in the Impact Campaign. They represented Suzette's case in front of the Supreme Court, and they gave him some great advice. So he and his family would hand out flyers right outside of our screening. They got to meet Suzette Kilo and talk to her. Well, coincidentally, the vote was the Monday after we screened. And by the way, packed houses. Every single screening was completely packed. It was a very, you know, hot issue there locally. And Monday came around, and the city council vote took place, and Mike and his family won. And they're very confident that they think that the film had a huge impact on the way people looked at what was going on. And so we feel that that's a minor victory. We want to do things like that too. There's still many instances of eminent domain abuse going on all over the country. So we want to use the film to do that too. And to be involved in our impact campaign and donate to the nonprofit, you can go to littlepinkhousemovie.com for information on that too.
Well, that must be very gratifying for you. I'm very glad to hear about that myself. I guess you've kind of answered one of my follow-up questions, which was, I guess Suzette Kilo wound up being happy with the way the film came out.
She's very happy with the way the film came out. And she's been a great partner in helping us just, you know, get the word out of the film. She and I were, we were in New York a couple of weeks ago, and we were on the Today Show during Megyn Kelly's hour promoting the film. I mean, she's doing everything she can because, I mean, she's happy, very happy with how the film came out, but Tom, she's not happy with what happened to her. I mean, she's still, as anyone would be, just angry and scarred from it. I mean, you know, she had to leave her dream house, and I don't think she'll ever really get over that. So I think this film is really, I hope it's in some way therapeutic, because like I said, people, when they watch it, when they are immersed in the dramatization of this horrific thing that happened to her, they feel. And I think that when she sees people empathizing in a way that maybe they had never done before, I think that there's something, for lack of a better word, therapeutic or soothing about that.
These events took place in Connecticut. Was Connecticut one of the states where there was some reform made to eminent domain laws?
No. In fact, they're still one of the worst.
Really?
Yeah.
So I never did follow up on that. Isn't that interesting? Even after, because I know that she got a lot of sympathy from people. I mean, there is a point in the film where she opens the door to her home and there are all these people who have gathered in her, in support of her.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to be very immersed in, you know, which states had good reform and which states don't. And the Institute for Justice, IJ.org, they're a fantastic organization. And this is one of the most important fights that they fight. They have a lot of information if people are interested on which states are the worst and which states are in pretty good shape. But in the fall, the plan for the social action campaign is to target those states that are still really, really bad with special screenings. And we had a congressional event in Washington, D.C., the week that we opened in theaters that was, again, showing the bipartisan nature of the film. It was co-hosted by Congressman Jamie Raskin and Congressman Dana Rohrabacher, who probably don't agree on a lot, but they both agree that this is really, really bad and it shouldn't be happening. So we're hopeful that we can bring a little bit more, or hopefully a lot more, attention to this and maybe make some changes.
Well, one other thing, what exactly did Pfizer wind up doing with the land that they took?
Well, it's complicated because they didn't technically own the land. The land was then handed over to a developer who was going to build a bunch of stuff that Pfizer would use, like condominiums for guests who were coming in from out of town, parking structures. So Pfizer did end up, and Pfizer did build some stuff in New London. They didn't build anything on Suzette's land or her neighbor's land, but they did build a few things in New London. But I mean, this was such a PR nightmare. I mean, they ended up leaving. They're completely gone from the area. Obviously Suzette and her neighbors don't live there. Her particular plot of land is completely barren. Nothing was, to this day, like I was out there two weeks ago, to this day, nothing exists on her land.
Is there any prospect of them eventually doing something? I mean, I get that you can't tell what plot of land they're going to wind up using, but that's just the icing on the cake of this whole situation.
Oh, absolutely. Ironically, it's ironically disgusting. If you go to her where her plot of land was, that parcel that, you know, the homes were bulldozed on, there's a sign and it says Fort Trumbull, open for new development opportunities.
Oh.
And look, even if something was built there and it was being used, I mean, at least it'd be, you know, being used, but nothing. I mean, it's been more than 10 years since the Supreme Court decision. So Suzette describes it as hallowed land. I don't know if anyone will build. I'm sure at some point somebody will. But the fact that more than 10 years have passed and the city has owned it for 10 years and absolutely nothing exists is just, like you said, the icing on the cake.
Unbelievable. Well, littlepinkhousemovie.com is the website. People should go check that out. I can tell you, I've watched it myself, and for what it's worth, it has the 100% Tom Woods seal of approval. So you can take that to the bank, so to speak, and definitely check it out and support movies like this. You know, and I know you're right that it's not an ideologically libertarian movie because everybody can sympathize with it. Any more than if you had made a movie about concentration camps,
right,
there'd be no reason that libertarians alone have a right to like that movie. We would all agree, you know, that that's an important thing. But still, all the same, it is something that we can wholeheartedly embrace, and that is kind of rare for us. And so it's one thing to sit around and complain that my values aren't reflected in the movies that come out, but, you know, it's very much another to go out when there is something that does reflect what you believe in, to go out and support it and spread the word about it, see it, do what you can. And so littlepinkhousemovie.com is where I would urge you guys to go and help out here, because this is a great cause and a great film. So, Courtney, best of luck with it. Hope you get adequate sleep in the coming weeks, but continued
thank
success.
You. Well, thank you so much for the great kind words and for your helping spread the word. Yes, if people want to, if they have people that in their lives that don't understand the importance of liberty, this is a great way to introduce people to, you know, the importance of liberty. And we just can't thank you enough for helping us spread the word.
Well, the pleasure is mine. Best of luck.
Thanks, Tom.
All right, everybody, that will do it for today. Tomorrow on the show, we've got a debate between David Pakman and Ray McGovern on the issue of Russiagate and its significance. So definitely make sure to tune in for episode 1150. Make sure you're subscribed to the show on iTunes. You can do that easily by going to tomwoods.com/iTunes. See you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.